I'll ask anybody's question but yours, if you're an idiot.
My wife can score more than 2 buckets on 11 shots because I know my wife will at least shot fake one time.
I want they bury me upside down and my critics can kiss my...
Welcome into the Made for March podcast, Tyler Aki and Tim Leonard. And Tim, our questions, they've finally been answered. The Big 12, the best conference in college basketball all season long. The Big 10, they're just weeping right now in the corner. It seemed like the both of those conferences were dead to right. But here we have it. The champion's been crowned. Congratulations to the Baylor Bears. And I got to say, I mean, that was a thorough ass kicking.
Yeah.
Start to finish. I mean, the game was over after the first, what, like 6 points were scored? You could kind of tell who the better team was, who was playing tight, who wasn't. And I mean, based off of those, I think going into the game, we both thought Gonzaga was going to win. But after the first 6 points, I think our answers probably changed a little bit because you just kind of saw the way Baylor was playing. You saw the way that Gonzaga was playing, and they were completely different teams from what we had seen during the regular season and in the NCAA tournament. So we're going to break down all of that stuff. We'll also get into some of the way too early odds on Bovada Sportsbook as well for next season. But 86-70, I mean, this was over from the get-go. It was a thorough beatdown by Baylor. You saw one team play as loose as can be. It felt like Baylor was looking like they had nothing to lose. Meanwhile, on the other side, you see Gonzaga, and they look as tight as can be and are playing like they're a 31-0 team that knows that they are one game away from ending the year undefeated and having the weight of that burden on them the entire game.
Yeah, it kind of had some Giants-Patriots undertones to it a little bit. It just felt like Baylor came out and, you're right, they had nothing to lose in a sense. They just looked like the free team that was playing like the underdogs. And I mean, they just looked like the better team. I didn't see it that way all season long. I think we touched on this in our little preview portion of the last podcast, saying something like the outcomes of the game, if you were to lay out, you know, Gonzaga blowout, Baylor blowout, Gonzaga tight win, Baylor tight win, I basically ruled out Baylor blowout. I just didn't see Gonzaga being held offensively in check the way they did. And then they couldn't get stops. They couldn't get rebounds. I mean, Mark Vidal had 8 offensive rebounds in the game, and it didn't matter that Baylor got in some foul trouble at the 5 position. They rotated some bigs at Timmy. Timmy was a little banged up, I guess, but I did not see this outcome, and you really just got to tip your hat to Baylor and Scott Drew, because there's no ifs, ands, or buts after watching that game. All season long, we had the question, how close is Baylor to Gonzaga? Is there a top two and then everyone else, or is it just Gonzaga? The 1-2 gap we joked about.
It's officially closed.
Yeah, it's definitely closed. I mean, Baylor looked like the better team from start to finish on the biggest stage, and maybe it was just an off night for Gonzaga, but it's hard to argue that Baylor didn't earn this one.
Let's say they end up playing that game 4 months ago. I feel like we might have seen the opposite outcome.
And it's hard to say, though, right? Like, that's how I felt 4 months ago going into the game, and maybe that's the case. I mean, definitely if they had played magically at the end of the regular season where Baylor was coming off the COVID pause, and that's another thing. Baylor, we were talking at the end of the regular season about, man, this is not looking good for Baylor. They're struggling against Iowa State in the first game back. And then they lost a couple games, if I'm not mistaken. They got blown out by Kansas, who we know Kansas had their struggles this year. And it just felt like, maybe this is going to be the story of Baylor's season. It's going to be a great what if. What if they didn't have that COVID pause and didn't have so many players test positive? But that culture is something, man, because they rallied back.
I look at it, and I'm starting to think to myself, did we overrate Gonzaga's defense all season long? And, like, obviously they weren't this world-beating defense. I mean, they weren't Loyola. They weren't even, like, a Baylor-level defense. But, and obviously they weren't Iowa either, where it was such a burden on them that they were going to lose games because of their defense. But I was starting to think, like, did we overrate Gonzaga's defense a little bit? Because when you saw them out there, it was like Suggs was physical with guys, but no one else wanted to really play physical with guys. Meanwhile, on the other side for Baylor, everyone wanted to play physical. I mean, from one through like eight on the bench, you saw guys that were up in other people's jerseys, and Gonzaga just didn't have that. They looked like a team that had relied on their offense all season long, which they did. And it just sort of clicked for them in 31 games, and then they got to game 32, and the offense, listen, you're never playing a bad offensive game when you score 70 points and you score 37 in the first half, but there was a bit of a punch that was missing, and especially on the defensive end, like you brought up, they didn't have that response. They got this down to 9 and made some like 8-0 runs and all that stuff. The stuff that you need to do to make these comebacks when you're down 19, 20 points. But at the same time, they just never got the key stop that could have made it 7 or 6 or continued to knife into that lead.
Yeah, I mean, I never really felt like their defense was anything too special. It finishes the year 11th on KenPom, but I don't know. Like, you look at the games that they won in that great non-conference stretch they had, where we really felt like they were for real. Kansas 102-90, won with offense. Iowa 99-88. Granted, that game's a little closer in score than I think it really was. West Virginia 87-82. I mean, they won with offense for the most part all season, and they won by just beating teams down the court, running on makes, getting into transition, getting guys like Jalen Suggs in the open court, and Baylor did a tremendous job of avoiding any sort of transition opportunities, avoiding Gonzaga running on makes. That was Mick Cronin's big thing after the UCLA game, and it just so happened that they won the game by running on a make, and Jalen Suggs caught a pass, and they did such a great job of not thinking about the last play defensively, and that's what Gonzaga's done all year. As soon as the ball goes in the basket, they run like a vintage North Carolina team and get up the court and capitalize on the defense trying to get back in time and not being able to get back in time. They never really got any of those easy Gonzaga buckets that we've seen all season long in this game against Baylor, which is a testament to them.
And I think it kind of looked like they weren't trying to do that at times. Like, they knew Baylor was going to lock back on defense, and Gonzaga just kind of took it. I mean, it felt like guys that we've seen run the floor all season long, whether it's Timmy, whether it's Corey Kispert or Nem, like guys that we've seen run the floor and run the floor well, just didn't seem interested at times in running the floor because they kind of felt like, oh, what's the point? Like, they're already all the way back on defense now, which is astonishing too because of the way that Baylor was rebounding the ball on offense. It just felt like that you could have pushed the pace at times on these guys if you'd secured a couple rebounds, but I just felt like the pace was never pushed by this Baylor or by Gonzaga all night long.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say they wanted to do it. They just couldn't, because why would they not want to? You know, it's definitely in their DNA, and it's what they've done all year. And another thing they've done all year is jump on teams in the beginning of the first half. And Baylor did that to them last night. So that's,
or if they didn't jump on teams, they jumped on them in like the final 5 minutes. And I guess you could say like Gonzaga made their little run, and usually when you score 37 points in a half, you're right at no worse down like 4 or 5, but it was 10, and that's a huge hole to climb out of at halftime.
It's amazing they were down 10 at half, and I was thinking, gosh, that was best case scenario for them. Like, how did they even get it to 10? It just felt kind of over for me, even at half. I know there was that little run of momentum, and they kind of threw out the zone for a little bit, which did seem to act as a little bit of a curveball to Baylor for not that long, really. But Baylor just, I mean, the way that Jared Butler just stepped into some crossover threes, Davion Mitchell, all their guys just rose to the moment. And frankly, the Gonzaga guys didn't. Like, Kispert in the Final Four, he was kind of underwhelming, and I don't know if he really elevated his draft stock at all. I always viewed him as a great 3-and-D wing prospect for the next level and a lottery pick, but, I mean, Baylor kind of held him in check. And, you know, we texted about this when it happened. That first Kispert three, I think it was 7-0, and he got a wide-open look. And once he missed that,
he knocks that thing down 100 times out of 100 during the regular season.
Like, yeah.
And even like earlier in the tournament as well.
And once he missed that, and he didn't just miss it. I mean, he missed it kind of offline, and his depth perception, it was just a bad miss. And I mean,
it looked like a hitch in his shot. He shot that ball and he just looked tight. He looked nervous when the second it left his hand, it had no chance of going in.
It was a shame because once that missed, I was like, yeah, we're getting a tight, nervous Gonzaga team tonight. And honestly, I hate that now the storyline, I'm sure on First Take and some of these talk shows, it's going to be, will Gonzaga ever get it done? Why do we believe in them? They were overrated all season. To that, I'd say, one, Baylor's a historically great team in their own right. I mean, Baylor rolled through their competition, and we have to put them on a pedestal as well. And it's not every day that once you make it to the national title game, you play a historically great team. And that's what Gonzaga ran into. They ran into a buzzsaw. And also, this was not the normal Gonzaga teams. And I don't know. Part of me is just bummed because I don't want us to go into next year's tournament thinking, like we did with Virginia for a couple years and Villanova for a couple years, will Gonzaga ever get it done in March? I just think it's so silly. They made it to the title game now twice, and clearly they're right on the brink, and clearly they're deserving of a lot of respect.
Yeah, like it's one thing to be the team who goes out and blows out their competition all regular season long, but then loses in the first weekend. Like, this team has made it to the second weekend the last five seasons now.
Yeah.
I mean, that in and of itself shows you that the program, that the team or whatever is not a fraud. When you're going to Final Fours, you're pretty much a lock to get to the Sweet 16 every single year. They don't really get upset. And that's the thing as part of this run is they have been. And even in some of these years, they're not the highest of seeds. Like, what were they a couple seasons ago? Were they like a 10 or a 12 in 2016 when they get to the Sweet 16?
10 seed,
like they get to the Sweet 16 with, and they can overachieve too. So I don't like to say the season was a failure for Gonzaga. I get that fans are probably disappointed. This felt like your best chance of finally breaking through and winning it all. But at the end of the day, they're still an all-time great. But like you said, you just met up with an all-time great that maybe got a little overshadowed because they did lose a game. And like, who knows how this game would have played out? What if we were looking at two teams that were both undefeated heading into their respective championships? And it would have been something to, like, would Baylor have been the one that, would they have also come out looking a little bit tight and a little nervous? Because you could see the shaky hands on one side, and it wasn't Baylor. I mean, they played as loose as could be. They played fast. They played their tempo. They played their game, and it was just too much. It overwhelmed the entire Gonzaga roster.
Yeah, it just bugs me because the people that are making that claim that Gonzaga's been overrated all year, they have not watched college basketball. They're parachuting in, and
they have more quality wins this season than Baylor does.
Yeah, and you know, you look back at their wins, and maybe you could play the game of like, well, Virginia was down this year, Kansas was down, were they really that good? But you can do that with any team. It's just, I mean, they beat BYU three times in their conference. BYU may have lost in the first round to UCLA, but so did everyone. And BYU is a top 20 team on KenPom to this day. So I don't know. I really try to stand up for Gonzaga any chance because it's frustrating that people haven't come around on them as a national power and a threat each and every year in March. They are, in my opinion, right now, the best program in college basketball. And I think they'll be right back there again next year, especially if they get Holmgreen, who's a five-star guy that they're kind of waiting on.
Number one player in the country, yeah.
Yeah.
They've already got five-star in the bank. I mean, this team could be even better next season. I know they're going to lose a lot, but in terms of talent, from a talent perspective, they could be even better next season. And who knows who's going to end up coming and going in the transfer portal and all that, but right now, Gonzaga's an attractive destination. If I'm a transfer, you've got a Hall of Fame-level coach, a guy who has proven to get to the second weekend time and time again. It's there. The formula is there. That is a spot that I don't care if it's Spokane, Washington. I'm going to go there. I'm going to win. And not just that, I'm going to set myself up for the NBA as well. I mean, look at the number of guys that Mark Few has put into the league lately.
Yeah, and there was a run when Mark Few first started doing this at Gonzaga, going back to when he took the job in 2000, really up until, I'd say, 2014. Where their March history was not great. And they lost as a one seed in the second round a lot. And they never got to the Elite. The first time they got to the Elite Eight was in 2015. And they made every year, they made the tournament from 2000 to 2015. But when you look at the recent history now, 2016, you said it, they were a 10 seed, made the Sweet 16. 2017, they finished runner-up to a very good UNC team. 2018, Sweet 16. 2019, Elite Eight. 2020, they had a really good team, didn't get to play the tournament. And 2021, runner-up. And they've had the best offense in KenPom the last 3 years now. Number one offense at the end of the year in KenPom for 3 years in a row. That is really a testament to the system they're running.
Right, and it just shows that the model of consistency favors offense over defense. Like, we have seen good defenses come and go, but when you're a good offensive team like Gonzaga has been, you're going to stay among the elite in college basketball year to year. I mean, I'm looking ahead right now, and Bovada has Gonzaga as the favorite to win it all next season. They're the only one with single-digit odds at 7-1 right now, followed up by Florida State, Michigan at 14-1. Baylor is at 20-1. They've got the sixth best odds to repeat right now. So again, there's still going to be a lot of momentum behind Gonzaga heading into next season. One other thing I wanted to bring up with this Gonzaga team is that they were a group that all season long prided itself on, we passed up great shots to get elite shots. Like, you could not get better looks. No one had better looks all season long than the Gonzaga Bulldogs, just because of the way that they could move the ball and facilitate, and the threats that they had on the outside, on the inside, with Timmy, with Kispert, with Suggs, with Ayayi, all these guys, Nembhard. But it felt like they tried too hard in this game to get the perfect shot. And when you try too hard against a defense that can switch at the caliber that Baylor can, and a defense that's as quick and as athletic and as long, and really, in this game, as feisty as Baylor was, that came around to bite them, because they tried too hard to get that perfect shot, and sometimes that perfect shot never materialized. Meanwhile, all season long, when they tried to get that perfect shot, it did show up. It did materialize on pretty much every possession, and it just felt like they took off too much time to try to get that perfect shot, and at the end of the day, they were still getting some mediocre looks, and Baylor, you got to credit their defense. I mean, they switched a lot. They were athletic. They closed out on shooters. And they made life really, really difficult for Gonzaga, who was already playing very nervous.
Yeah, the two stats to me that determined this game, and I guess there's more than two, but because of the way the Baylor just kind of whooped them. But three-point shooting, Baylor goes 10 for 23. That's 43.5%. Gonzaga, by comparison, shoots at just 5 for 17 from 3. There was one point in the game I looked up and I was like, I think you texted me this, right? How does Gonzaga have three threes? That was at the end of the game.
And two of them were like back-to-back from Suggs. Like, I could have sent that text 30 seconds earlier and it would have been one.
Yeah. So Kispert goes 2 for 7 from 3. Suggs goes 2 for 5. Nembhard, who really struggled, I'd say. I mean, he made a big three in the overtime against UCLA, but in the final four, I'm not going to say he struggled in the beginning of the season or beginning of the tournament, but because really everyone was cooking for Gonzaga in the beginning of the tournament. Once they got to the final four, Nembhard struggled a little bit. Ayayi was still pretty good, but they just didn't get Kispert shooting to the degree that they normally do. And then the other stat that stands out, offensive rebounds. 16 for Baylor in the game. I mentioned Vital had 8 of them. First possession, he grabbed like 2 or 3, and it was just right. Kind of set the tone. And Suggs got in that early foul trouble, which is worth noting. And Gonzaga only had 5 offensive rebounds. I think they were down by 10 at the end of the first half.
Forget the offensive rebounds for Gonzaga. They had 17 defensive rebounds.
Yeah.
I mean Baylor was collecting half of their misses.
Yeah. I think there was, at the half, they were down by 10. And I believe, maybe I'm wrong here, but I thought I heard someone say Baylor had shot, I think, 16 more shots, or it was something in that neighborhood at the end of the first half. And that's basically what it ended up being. Baylor 40.
They ended up getting 18 more, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's a huge difference in the game.
I'm looking at it in terms of the three-point aspect, okay? Because nerves were clearly a part of this game on the Gonzaga side. Not on the Baylor side, but definitely on the Gonzaga side. When you look at the 5 for 17 from 3, and I don't have all the numbers in front of me, but I would pander a guess that that is the worst that Gonzaga has shot from 3 all season long. And I would pander a guess that that's the fewest 3-point shots made. That, like, if you told me that was the only game Gonzaga had single-digit 3-point shots made, I would probably believe you. But how much? Well, like, where would you put the percentage split of Baylor's defense versus nerves?
So, actually, I'm looking it up now, and they really have had some bad 3-point shooting games this year. They were 4 for 16 in that tight game against West Virginia. But in general, they've just never really been a terrific 3-point shooting team. I do think, to answer your question, it was a lot of nerves, in my opinion. Like, Corey Kispert's first shot attempt.
I think the Kispert 3, yeah, that set the tone.
For sure. And Kispert made one in the late stages against UCLA, but it's amazing because he was so, so good all year from three and so efficient. And maybe it was just a matter of not even nerves, but he just kind of got in a little bit of a rut at the wrong time. It wasn't like he was bad, but I just don't really remember him hitting a big shot in the Final Four, which is kind of hard to believe going into it.
Final Four, but really the entire tournament, it kind of felt like he struggled. Like, I think he played well, if I'm remembering correctly, against Oklahoma. But, like, if you look at the most outstanding player of the tournament odds on Bovada, I mean, this guy was nowhere near the running, it felt like. And it kind of felt like he was a name brand that kind of held water at the top for the first couple. But once you got into the Final Four, I mean, it was Timmy, it was Suggs. I mean, heck, even Ayayi leapfrogged him in terms of the most outstanding player of the tournament.
Yeah, and kind of looking through these three-point numbers, maybe we just overrated. I mean, Gonzaga really didn't even shoot a ton of threes this year for the amount of shots that they were getting off per game. But there are a lot of times where they were hovering around 6-7 threes. That was probably their average makes, if I had to guess, just looking at the full game log here. So
it always felt like they made so many more just when you're watching them. Like, yeah. And yes, a lot of it were really good twos and really good drives by Suggs, by Kispert, by Timmy. It just always felt like, oh, there's a three from Nembhard. Oh, there's a three from Ayayi. There's a three from Suggs, Kispert. Like, you expect them to make the open ones just because of the way that they move the ball. And they had plenty of open looks in this game and even some that were good enough looks. And it just never felt like they were going to go down. It, like, Suggs got into a little bit of a rhythm, but it was probably too late.
Yeah, and by the way, to add to this whole Gonzaga was overrated, that's nonsense take, they also looked great until they got to the Final Four. I think we need to remember, I mean, USC was one of the best teams in the country.
Oh, yeah,
the way
they were reseeded, if you had reseeded the teams, they probably would have been like five.
Yeah, and I don't want to make this
eight or four of the eight
all this whole podcast standing up for Gonzaga, because I do think a lot of the takeaway here is Baylor probably didn't get enough respect this year, and Scott Drew is now elevated himself into a different tier. Baylor as a program is in a different tier, and they did it so quickly. I mean, 2019, the last NCAA tournament we had, they lost to Gonzaga. They played a game against Gonzaga, and they were a 9 seed, and they lost. And that year, if I'm not mistaken, 2019, Baylor was picked to finish last in the Big 12 Conference. And think about that. I mean, now they're on their way to being one of the better programs year in and year out. And it's great that I was worried about them as a team last year that maybe got robbed of that one opportunity that they really had to showcase their skills and elevate themselves in the tournament to an elite status. And you think about other teams that were robbed last year. Florida State had a really good team, even Gonzaga as well. It could have been their year last year. It could have been San Diego State. Kansas was looking really good.
Dayton.
Dayton. That's
you're
almost example.
Rooting for one of those teams to pull it off this season. And yeah. I'm glad we had two of them in the national championship.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I don't know. I think Baylor's a real thing now. We have to consider them in an elite conference. And it's so cool seeing those Scott Drew press conference clippings, because it's easy for us to be like, yeah, every coach probably says that. But at the time, I mean, Baylor was in a bad spot.
I mean, he probably got laughed off the podium for saying that. Like, remember the state of Baylor basketball at the time. They had a player kill one of his own teammates, and then they tried to cover it up by saying, oh, there were drugs involved and all that stuff, and they tried to cover it up that way. But here you go. It's just like, this is a turnaround. And I know people were speaking and using very bold terms about like, oh, this is the greatest turnaround in terms of a program. Like, it really is. This is a team. Like, I'm trying to make the parallel, but it almost kind of feels like if the Kansas football program came around and won a national championship.
Yeah.
Like, think about the dire situation that they are in. And like Baylor, that wasn't a program that won tournament games. They were kind of the laughing stock of the Big 12. And I mean, you've seen the stat, like they hadn't been to the Final Four since, what was it, 1948 or 1950?
Yep.
And Scott Drew even joked about it with Jim Nance after the game, like, none of us were alive for that. So it's one of those things where I don't think we're really giving enough credit. And maybe it's because people look at Baylor and think, oh, like, they're a fantastic football program. Or, I mean, even their women's program has been fantastic as well throughout the past, I don't know how many years, but like 20 or so years. So it's one of those things where, oh, you just kind of held them in high regard because, oh, they're Baylor University. Like, they're supposed to be good. But really, that hasn't been the case. And Scott Drew in the last 15 or so years has really flipped the switch with this program. And to the point now where they are the national champions. They were the best team, and they took down a historically great team to cement themselves as a historically great team of all time.
So Scott Drew took over in 2004, his first year with Baylor. 2004, they go 3-13 in Big 12 conference play, 232nd final ranking on KenPom. 2005, 236th final ranking on KenPom, 1-15 in conference play. They did not have a winning season in Big 12 conference play until 2008. That was the first year he made the tournament with them. They did make two Elite Eights. They had some fun teams in kind of the early 2010s. But you're right, and that's a large part of my case for why I thought Gonzaga was going to win this game, was just it felt like Scott Drew and Baylor, it was their first Final Four since 1950. It felt ahead of the curve to win it this go-around. It felt like Gonzaga was more due as the team to break through.
Yeah, like, and Gonzaga was next in line. I mean, we saw with Virginia, and now it felt like Gonzaga. And it felt like next year would have been Baylor, probably. Right.
And you know me, I love comparing stuff to golf, because I love golf. But this is almost as if, you know, the big storyline in golf every year is that best player to never win a major. And it's similar to college basketball. It's the best coach to never win a national title. And this is almost as if some 23-year-old golfer got into a Sunday final group in a major for the first time, and he just executed.
Yeah, whereas, I was going to say, like, this is Ricky Fowler going up against, like, Victor Hovland to win the Masters this weekend. And Vic wins.
Right. And it's like, man, Ricky lost again? Like, is he ever going to get it done? And I do think Gonzaga will get it done. But in golf, there's a – and in basketball, too. In college basketball, it's the same way. There's a progression that most teams go through where you have to get there, lose, learn a few things, come back, lose again probably, learn some more things – and then maybe you get there and you win it. That's what happened to Villanova. That's what happened to Virginia. I mean, heck, they lost to a 16 the year before they won it. They think they learned a lot of things through that experience. Baylor kind of skipped that step, and Baylor kind of did basically what Colin Morikawa did this past year at the PGA Championship, and it's like, oh my gosh, now they've got one. They've kind of got the monkey off their back. Maybe they keep this thing rolling. And who knows when it's Gonzaga's time. I would say, I would wager a lot of money that Gonzaga and Mark Few will get at least one national title by the time he hangs it up. But it's a shame that this wasn't the one, because it felt like the stars were aligning for it to be the one this year.
No doubt. And it's funny, I was walking around yesterday and I was actually thinking of that same golf comparison. Like, Gonzaga, it feels like it's their turn. It's their turn now. Yeah. Like, Baylor, you can wait in the wings for maybe a year or two, and you'll be back. Don't worry, because you've built something. You've built a fantastic program and culture, and you've got all these guys who have bought in and become vital keys to what you're trying to do, what you're trying to build. And Gonzaga was next. Like, they had waited their turn. They had been through the heartbreak. They had seen it all, and it felt like this was finally their turn, and Mark Few. And it just, all the stars aligned, and all of a sudden it just took a left turn, and here you go, Baylor with the early punch in the mouth, and the game was pretty much over. I mean, I never thought, and maybe I guess in hindsight, and hindsight is always 20/20, but in the moment, like, I probably thought to myself, yeah, like, Gonzaga's been in this spot before, but Gonzaga's never been in this spot before and been playing like that.
Yeah.
Like, if we saw a normal Gonzaga performance, I would have felt pretty confident saying, like, oh, yeah, they can come back from this. Like, this is nothing for them. That wasn't even the first championship game they've been down double digits at the half in this season. Like, they were down to BYU by 12 in the first half of the WCC championship. But Gonzaga, they never flinched in that game. Meanwhile, I mean, they were flinching left and right in this one.
Right.
And it kind of felt like when Suggs picked up the second foul, when Kispert had the awful shot, the awful form on the shots, I mean, you could kind of tell the writing was on the wall that, yeah, Baylor's going to not just win this game, but they're going to run away with this game. And yeah. I think one thing you hit right on the head too, and we kind of talk about it with, like, the who's going to be the Dante DiVincenzo on each team to kind of carry and provide that supplemental role off the bench, or like in a lesser starting role. We kind of pinpointed it down to, is it Joel Ayayi or Adam Flagler?
Yeah.
And Flagler was fantastic in this game. I mean,
he's probably coming
back.
Yeah.
Yeah, 13 points, 3 of 4 from 3 off the bench, hit some big free throws. He's attacking well. He's providing a little bit, rebounding, facilitating. He had a pair of assists, a steal. I mean, he was awesome in this game. So much so, he played 22 minutes. And, I mean, it kind of left Matthew Meyer in the backdrop of everything. He didn't have to do as much. And Flagler, I mean, he hit pretty much everything that he was asked to hit.
Yeah, he finished the year 46 for 106 from three, 106 attempts, so 43.4%. I can't remember him missing a shot all year. Every time I watched him, he was just lights out, I felt like. And Chumwa Chachua played well. He was kind of a different player in the closing stretch. So, Baylor, when you look back at their path here to get to the tournament, first off, I think this is still a true record. I'd have to double check, but I know that UNC, the 2009 team, because, of course, Tar Heel Tim, I got to throw in a biased stat here, but they were the first team when it happened, I think the only team still, to win the national title by winning every single game, all 6 NCAA tournament games by double digits. Baylor basically did it. The only game that didn't happen is Arkansas, and they won that game by 9. Now, the other thing to bring up, they were down at the half. I think it was by 8 to Villanova, and they won that game by 11. But outside of Villanova, which, and they were down by 8, I just double checked, they at the half, that was the only time they were really truly tested. I mean, what they did to Houston, what they did to Zaga, that's uncharted territory, really, for a Final Four just to basically buzzsaw two teams in a row.
Like, and we've seen the team that kills someone in the Final Four, right?
Yeah.
Like, we've seen it. UNC crushed Syracuse back in 2016. I mean, even on the other side, Villanova killed Oklahoma.
Bloodbath, yeah.
And then usually you play that next game, and sometimes it feels like, oh, well, I don't think we can do that 2 times in a row. And the games end up being closer. And in the case of that one literally came down to the final seconds. So, like, we see that happen. We see it all the time, and then you get to the national championship game, and usually the script can sometimes be flipped on you too. I mean, think about, like, Michigan and Loyola, and then Michigan gets to the national championship against Villanova, and Nova just kills them. I mean, like, we've seen the reverse happen. We rarely see you blow a team out in the Final Four, and then you blow a team out in the national championship. So,
yeah.
I mean, what Baylor did, I mean, as dominant of a run as you could possibly have.
Right, the other thing that they did is they lost in the conference tournament to Oklahoma State. Now, again, I'm just bringing up this UNC 2009 team a whole heck of a lot because I'm biased, but that UNC team did the same thing, and I heard Tyler Hansbrough recently talking about this, and he said something like, I'm paraphrasing, but I thought that was actually good for us, that we lost in the conference tournament, because then we took about a week off and we checked all the film. And I don't know, Baylor probably didn't necessarily have a full week, but they went back, they looked at what they did wrong, and they were like, all right, we're not going to do that again. And that just gave them some weird sense of calmness and freedom, that UNC team, that they were set. They got rid of their bad performance, and now they were on their way, and they know what to do to correct that, and they're going to bring it in the NCAA tournament. And I don't know, maybe that happened to this Baylor team, but I mean, they only lost two games all year. We're acting like once the pause happened, it was like DEFCON zero, but it kind of was to them. I was worried.
Look at the Iowa State game. Even though that was a win, it felt like a loss. I'm sure if you went in that locker room after, Scott Drew was not too happy.
Right. And, I mean, they lost at Kansas, which is a tough place to win. And then they went to overtime with West Virginia and beat them on the road in Morgantown. And then from there, they were kind of fine, it's with the exception of the Oklahoma State game. So, yeah, I think Baylor now, although I didn't think this would be the conversation we would be having, I thought we'd be having it with Gonzaga. You have to consider Baylor as one of the better teams in recent memory in college basketball from start to finish. And it's good that one of those teams won this year, because if it was UCLA, then a lot of people would have thrown out, oh, it was a COVID-19 weird season, does it really count? Which is kind of garbage to me, because if anything, Baylor had to deal with more adversity and they still managed to win 28 of 30 games. Like, that's absurd.
Right. And bringing up your point about Hansbrough and the losing, it felt like Gonzaga never really had the chance to do that, because, I mean, they played an A-plus game pretty much for 30 of the 32 games. I think you could say they played an A-plus offensive game against UCLA, but I don't think you could say the same about their defense in that game. But, like, what did they have to draw from? I mean, it felt like Gonzaga kind of played this year, and it's like a parent who's like a yes man all the time. It's like ice cream for dinner, ice cream for breakfast, ice cream for lunch every single day. And it felt like you had Gonzaga, they just kind of ate ice cream for breakfast and all three meals all throughout the season. There was nothing to draw from. Like, what were they going to do? Go out and lose a game on purpose? They just killed teams every single, I mean, even there was nothing for them to pick up from. Even from that West Virginia game, it's like, oh, well, Jalen Suggs got hurt, so Jalen, just don't get hurt when you go out there. Like, that's the only thing they could have pointed to and been like, that's where we struggled, is when we were missing one of our best players, and the guy on our team is going to go the highest in the NBA draft this year got hurt and looked like he may have busted his Achilles. And we kind of went in a little rut, but he came back, and the team came out. And quite frankly, the way that game ended, it felt like Gonzaga won by double digits. So when you're winning all these games and you're killing all these teams, and you can say, oh, it's a mid-major conference. No, you're beating Power 5 teams by double digits. Like, I don't have all the numbers in front of me, but I would guess Gonzaga had the most wins against Power 5 teams by double digits this year. I mean, can you pinpoint another team that was killing Power 5 competition like Gonzaga was?
Well, I guess if you're in a Power 5 conference, you just get more chances. But I think your point holds. They had the most wins by double digits.
The percentage is no doubt. Yeah. Is no doubt. But even the quantity is probably up there, too. I guess Baylor probably is right around there, if not maybe the leader after their tournament run. But, I mean, they were neck and neck with this the entire time. And, I mean, also, credit to Baylor. I mean, they got the best team possible along the way. Like, when you look at the path, like, we talked about how Houston, they literally drew the worst opponent out of every matchup possible.
Yeah.
And you could say it's luck, and like, you do need some luck along the way. Every championship team needs some luck along the way. But Baylor, they drew the better team out of every, I guess you could say, maybe not in the Wisconsin North Carolina game, but at the end of the day, 8-9, what's the real disparity, especially when the 9 team just kicks the hell out of the 18 in that game. So I look at it and it's like Baylor drew pretty much the tougher team at every step along the way. And you look at, I mean, they just killed all these teams. I mean, they looked like Gonzaga in the regular season when they went up against a lot of these teams.
Yeah, it was really impressive. The other thing is, you have to wonder if there was just some trickle over effect from that UCLA game for Gonzaga, in the sense that it felt like UCLA gave them a test that no one was really expecting. And then Gonzaga started that game thinking, man, we can't get down again. we got to play better than we did the other night to beat these guys. And it's not like they came, I mean, Baylor came in riding high. They just dominated Houston. How could they not have the utmost confidence in the world going into that game? Because they're thinking, all right, we just played a 2 seed and we were clearly the better team from start to finish. And if we do that again, we'll probably win. Like, that's what they're thinking. Whereas Gonzaga is saying, oh no, like we're the favorite. We're the team that's expected to win. And maybe UCLA kind of...
an all-time point spread as well.
Yeah. I think UCLA hurt their confidence a little bit because they were riding high. And I don't know if it was just... I mean, it's a silly game to play. But if they came in off a normal 10-12-point win in the Final Four first game, then maybe they just don't come out as tight as they did against Baylor. But also, it's a credit to Baylor, like we keep saying.
Well, I will say this in terms of how they came out. Like, Gonzaga played a fine offensive game against UCLA, in my opinion. I mean, you scored 93 points. I get it was overtime, but you're still in the 80s in regulation. And, like, I feel like they still played their game offensively. I don't think they should have had shattered offensive confidence. Now, maybe shattered defensive confidence.
Yeah, that's the thing that I'm talking about more than anything. Right, okay, the defense was bad. Yeah.
But you look at this game, like, Gonzaga can win games when the opponent scores 86, and they just got locked down defensively, and not just that, but they just looked awful offensively on top of that as well. If you told me that Gonzaga was going to look a little off defensively, I would have said, okay, I could see that. I mean, number one three-point shooting team in the country, team that moves the ball really well, team that can create their own shots.
Yeah, I thought the
really
over
well.
Was going to hit. And
yeah,
I think we're,
and it had a 96% chance of hitting it at like the 11-minute mark. So the number, I think, settled at 159.5 on Bovada. And, it gets to 156, but it looked like a lock. And then all of a sudden, everyone stopped scoring. I mean, even Baylor, I think, went into like a 4-minute stretch where they didn't score a field goal and they struggled to score. But no, I'm with you. Like, I was just surprised by the offensive confidence that was shattered on this Gonzaga team. Like, if you told me defensively, I could have bought into that when you let up 90 points to UCLA, who scored 51 to get to that game. But when you turn it into an offensive struggle, that's what I have trouble keeping up with, because I didn't think Gonzaga, that this team was going to struggle offensively at any point this season.
Yeah. Final thing I'll say before, and then we can get into those Bovada next year odds, the way too early top 25, one of my favorite topics, but I just want to give props. Davion Mitchell, really one of the more fun college basketball players I've watched.
Did you see Donovan Mitchell? He walked into the game with the Davion Mitchell jersey.
Really? I didn't see that. Yep. That's awesome. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's a blast, and I'd take him if I'm an NBA team, and I have a top 10 pick next year. And I'd take him over Corey Kispert after what I watched. And I don't want to be prisoner of the moment. I think teams overreact to what we see in the tournament a little bit, and I guess I'm saying NBA teams and front office and execs, but I don't know. I mean, Davion Mitchell is just so good, and his game really is tailor-made for the NBA already. He finishes in traffic. He gets big guys switched onto him, and he just blows by him. It's going to be a little bit tougher. Yeah, but
he
kind of
reminds me a little bit of Ja Morant. Like, yeah, how he's just not afraid of anything. He'll elevate over anyone. He can step back on anyone. He can get to the basket. I mean, he's got an excellent handle. He's super quick. I mean, he is a legit NBA guy. He may be a little undersized at 6'2", but I don't think that phases him at all. I mean, he was never afraid of Gonzaga in this game. And yeah. I mean, he's one, like, you hear coaches say, I would like five of player X on my team. Like, I would like five Davion Mitchells on my team. Yeah. And I think it's somewhat of a crime too that he did not win at most outstanding player, because it felt like he was that guiding force. And I know Jared Butler had the sexier stat line, and what was it? Jared Butler was the first player since Carmelo back in 03 to have 20 plus points and 7 plus assists in a national title game. But I mean, watching through that entire tournament, like, that was Davion Mitchell's team. It felt like he took the reins over.
Yeah, he was awesome. And I think Jared Butler won most outstanding player, which makes sense. Butler was also so good.
He was good.
Championship game. Yeah. So I don't know. It's, it's amazing that team because they kind of had a rotating cast of who brings it each night, whether it was Teague, Mitchell, Butler, Flagler would get hot in stretches. And then yeah, in the biggest games.
Felt like a Nova team.
Yeah, biggest games. That game last night, they all came together. And that's saying something to do it all at once in the biggest game of the year.
All right, any last thoughts before we head into some of these Bovada odds on the title for next season?
No, way I'm curious to see these. I haven't seen them yet, so
okay. I kind of laid out the first four for you here. Gonzaga at 7-1. You got Florida State, Michigan at 14-1. Ohio State 16-1. As is Villanova at 16-1. Then you got Baylor at 20-1 in a class with them in Kansas. And then after that, 25-1, you get a pretty sizable pack. Here are the 25-1s. Duke, Houston, Illinois, Kentucky, Louisville, Texas Tech, UCLA, Virginia, Virginia Tech, West Virginia. But can I give you the value that I see right now?
Yeah. Like,
if you want to really get out ahead of it right now, Purdue at 30-1
is
kind of appetizing to me. 30-1 for a team that was playing its best basketball at the end of the year this year. Even though they got upset in that first round, they were a very freshman-led team. When you look at Jaden Ivey, and who knows what's going to happen with Trevion Williams too, but Zach Edey, I mean, talk about a player who came into his own at the end of the year. Zach Edey, when you've got a 7-4 behemoth, and Purdue has had many of them over the years, to go along with a guard who's played as well as Jaden Ivey did to close out the season, that's the team that I would look at as a team that can make some noise and at least gives you a hedging opportunity along the way.
Yeah, I mean, gosh, the Big Ten's got to win a title soon. Like, or Gonzaga. One of the two has to win it next year, I feel.
Who's going to win a title first, the Big Ten or Gonzaga?
We say it every year, and it's becoming more and more like maybe it's just not going to happen, but I don't know. I think Purdue, they're going to bring back everyone besides Williams, maybe. And I don't even know if he really translates great to the NBA. So if I'm him, just come back, man. Try and win a title. That'd be my assumption on it. But who knows what he'll do. And Michigan's going to be really good. Juwan Howard's bringing in the best recruiting class in the country, according to most sites. They'll lose a lot, but the question is how much will they lose? Hunter Dickinson's a big question mark for Michigan. Because if he goes pro, same thing, it changes your prospects, but maybe he comes back and rallies behind the mantra of let's try and go win this thing. The Big Ten really needs a title to kind of put to bed the critics a little bit, and they've got a couple candidates next year, but I would also be thinking about wagering on Gonzaga as well, because the more this passes, the more I feel like they're due for that quote-unquote first major or that first title for few.
Do you feel like this Gonzaga team, like, was this their Virginia run where you had the heartbreak of losing your only, and I get it's different in the fact that, oh, well, Virginia suffered the most embarrassing loss in NCAA tournament history, being the first one to lose to a 16, but, I mean, Gonzaga, this has to sting.
Absolutely. I felt like it was, but I also, my case was that they already kind of had their Virginia run when they lost to UNC because they had gotten to that moment before.
Yeah, and I guess the tough thing here too is you're not going to be returning a lot of your roster. Like
Timmy's a big question mark.
You could lose your top four or five players. Like if Nembhard, Ayayi, Suggs, Kispert, Timmy all went into the draft, all five of them would get picked, I think. I mean, maybe you got a question mark with Nembhard, but the other four definitely are going to get picked in the NBA if they were to enter their names in. It's just a matter of...
Yeah, I don't know about Timmy. I think he would, but definitely
I think Timmy...
Three.
Isn't Timmy like a lottery guy? I've seen Timmy's name in the lottery a lot. So, in fact, I think he might be the highest. So... Again, so much can fluctuate between now and when the combines and all that stuff happen. But, I mean, you're looking at a guy or a team that really could get depleted. Now, you're going to be bringing in a lot. We know there's one five-star on the way. You could have Chet Holmgren joining that conversation as well. But, I don't know. We'll have to wait and see, because this is a Gonzaga team that could be depleted. But again, they're just going to start to reload. They've gotten to that point now where they have the respect of the high schoolers across the country that even if we are a great team and going to lose a lot, like, we can reload. We can replenish. I mean, you lost your best player from a season ago because he wanted to go play overseas in Europe after his freshman season. And now they come back and it's like they didn't even miss him because Timmy emerged and because Suggs was fantastic and Kispert took another step. So we've reached that point now with Gonzaga basketball where they're just going to reload time and time again.
Yeah, they'll be really good next year. I do think, will the Blue Bloods bounce back next year in your eyes? Because I'm still skeptical. I mean, I don't like UNC's state of influx, bringing in Hubert Davis, which I'm sure we'll flesh out more and talk about more. We'll probably get into
We haven't even
coaches.
Gotten into the coaching carousel.
Right, there's a
what's
lot.
Been happening. We can do that later on next week, but I'm looking at, in terms of Blue Bloods, as I look at the Bovada odds here, so Villanova has the highest or like the shortest odds of any of the Blue Bloods at 16-1. Kansas at 20-1, Duke at 25-1. I'm looking Kentucky also at 25-1, UCLA at 25-1. Where else we got? Michigan State at 30-1.
Yeah, I just don't feel great about even a Michigan State or a Kentucky next year. I know they added Kellen Grady is going to Kentucky. Shibway will be on the roster, but Devin Askew just entered the portal. We'll get into all the portal news, I'm sure, more next week. Kansas, Bill Self's got a lifetime contract now. That's noteworthy.
Pressure's off there.
Right. I don't know. I think we always overrate these Blue Bloods, and I'm seeing a ton of them pop up in this way too early top 25s that are going around. And I don't know. Duke, to me, what's the case for why Duke will be so much better next year? Those freshmen will come in, and they've got some really good, a great recruiting class. I want to make it clear that I understand they have a great recruiting class coming in. Who knows if Matt Hurt comes back? But all these pieces that you're like, will they come back? Will they not? I mean, you're still relying on, for the most part, the team that was there last year, and maybe they'll just gel better after a full offseason. Maybe that's the case, but it's not like Duke is uber talented in terms of the returners that they have coming back.
If they can get a guard that can run the team, I think that's the difference for them. Because they had the Trey Joneses, the Tyus Jones. Like, when they have the guard to run the team and facilitate and not necessarily take up all the shots, and play really good defense on top of that as well, that can be a good team. Like, if you took Trey Jones and he stayed and you put him on this year's Duke team, like, that's a tournament team, no doubt in my mind. But you just need the, because you can have the supplementary parts and they're going to have plenty of them, but it's what are you going to get out of the guard position? And I haven't really gone down the rabbit hole of who's staying, who's going, but like, if Jeremy Roach comes back or if DJ Stewart comes back, and again, they may have already declared or something like that.
I think they're coming back as of now.
Test the waters. But if they come back, like, that could be a good Duke team. That could be a very good, like, that could be a national title level Duke team.
Yeah, Maryland's going to get a lot of buzz too, given what they added. I think my overall guess is that we'll still see the trend of the Blue Blood slipping a little bit and these other conferences gaining some steam continue. Like, I look at St. Bonaventure's going to be really good. Memphis should be good, although we kind of say that every year. I don't know. Wichita
Boogie
State
Ellis
should
is gone
be good.
Off of,
yeah,
off
Boogie's
of Memphis
gone. Or at least he's in the portal, so who knows where he'll end up. But Houston, I think, will be good next year. They just added UConn big. And so, I don't know. I think we'll see that trend continue would be my guess at this point.
Yeah, so, and they'll have the full off seasons as well. Everything should start to get back to normal bit by bit across athletics and the world. So we'll see. It should be a super entertaining off season. It was a fun season. We got a fantastic, I know it was a blowout, but that was a great championship game to watch because, let's be honest, like, we learned something in that game. Like, we'd never seen a team dismantle Gonzaga. We got a new result in that game. And I think that is always kind of fun for me to see it when you learn something about a team and you learn something about how to pick apart a team as well. So we got a new result. I found that to be an entertaining game because Baylor put on a clinic, man. Like, that was fun. That was fun to watch. Yeah. That was kind of like the when the Raptors took down the Warriors. Like, that's kind of what that felt like. You don't want to discredit what the Raptors did. Did the better team win? Who knows? But it was.
I think they did. I mean, at this point, it's just
the better team in that game definitely won. Yeah. I don't know if season to season if the best team won, but you cannot take away anything that what Baylor did. Like, they showed up when the moments mattered, and they sure as hell showed up in that national championship game. So
no doubt.
We'll get into some coaching carousel stuff. We'll also look at the transfer portal because free agency is awesome. That's what I've learned from college basketball and the way that the transfer portal is set up this year. So we're going to dive into all of that throughout the offseason because there is news every single week. So for Tim, I'm Tyler. Thanks for hanging with us all season long. A fantastic national title game to be the cherry on top. And we'll talk to you guys next week.
The game was over.